Welcome to Focus on the Community on WAMW. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. Well, I'm pleased to have Dan Murray, a Davis County prosecutor, on with this week's show. He's a friend and he's a colleague, and glad to welcome you to the show, Dan.
Thank you, and I am extraordinarily happy to be here.
Thank you. So what I really want to focus on, Dan, today is criminal justice matters and what's important to you and how they really affect our local community. And but before we get started, most people are going to know who you are, but tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be Davis County prosecutor.
So I started in the prosecutor's office in 2002. I was the chief deputy.
15 years old, right?
Well, 15, yes. I straight out of junior high. I was a chief deputy for 8 years, and that was a terrific time to gain experience when you're chief deputy. When you're chief deputy, you're kind of the main trial deputy, and I just learned some incredible lessons from people like our friend Blake Chambers, who was just a terrific, terrific trial attorney. He just taught me so many things from individuals like Harry Hansen. You know, I was just so lucky to experience the kind of elder statesmen that are no longer practicing actively, but they taught me a lot about it. But that's how I started. In 2010, I was elected the first time, and I've been there ever since.
And it's my impression, when you ran in 2010, let's see, that was, because you were just reelected this week.
That's right.
And so that was your third election, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And you've never been opposed.
That's right. That's right,
too. Not in the courtroom, not on the ballot, nothing.
Right? And in the courtroom, there's opposition. Many times we have to litigate or present things to the judge. But no, I've been very fortunate, and I take that very seriously, and I'm honored and humbled that this community has entrusted me with this position and that I've not had an opponent. And that's more than me. That's a credit to my team, to the law enforcement community that we have here.
Just the stability, I think, is pretty incredible.
Yes. And when you mention stability, it would be important for me to point out Judge Arthur and God rest her soul, Judge Dwyer, who were so instrumental in creating a culture years ago where attorneys just decided to get along because that was the way to do business. And, you know, your handshake meant something and your word meant something. And so I just fell into an amazingly wonderful situation that they created. I had nothing to do with it. And ever since then, that stability, I think, has helped carry me through these three elections.
Well, good comments. I know, so 2010, 2014, and then this was your third reelection bid. And so three terms. Are we going to see more terms after that, or are you going to hang it up and retire, or what are you going to do?
I'm excited about 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021.
Sure.
I don't pretend that you get to be prosecutor forever. I don't get to know where it goes from here.
Tell me about that. Relative to that comment, we had a longstanding prosecutor over in Martin County that lost on election night. Did that impact you in any way, or any thoughts on that?
I'm happy for Aurelia. There's an opportunity there. It's an extraordinarily important job, and I'm excited to see the new ideas and the fresh perspective that she's going to bring to the job. I'm a huge proponent of women in law enforcement, and that's a whole nother. I got another 20 minutes for you, Grant, if
sure.
you want to hear about
all right,
that
next week.
But
sure.
I'm excited about that. Mike Steiner, who lost, you know, there's a climate that I think he kind of got wrapped up in. I think Martin County has flipped over to be a red county now, and if you look at the numbers. And I haven't delved into it too deeply, but the Braun Donnelly race kind of mirrors the Mike Steiner and Aurelia Wright race over there. And I think that's a reflection of how things have changed.
Absolutely. Top of the ticket tends to drive these things. Well, let's get right into it, Dan. Again, appreciate you coming on to talk about criminal justice issues. I think you told me last time you were on, there was a discussion about needle exchange. Maybe walk me through that, where we're at on that in the state, and then your thoughts locally.
So statewide, there's legislation that will allow local communities to implement a needle exchange. And for those people who aren't familiar, a needle exchange is a clearinghouse, a health facility that will give clean needles to people who are addicted to intravenous drugs. Now, the rationale
is... Does it cost anything?
No, it doesn't cost anything.
Okay.
The rationale is that it will reduce the number of diseases that are transmitted by intravenous drug use. So HIV, hepatitis C, et cetera. Now, as a standalone principle, I am totally for reducing these kinds of chronic diseases. The problem is the application doesn't always match the idea. And what was a terrible tragedy over in Scott County was relatively limited. And the approach that we have taken in Davis County is to say that we don't want needle exchanges at all because of the unintended consequences. We don't want needles in our dugouts where our kids are playing baseball, in our parks, scattered along the roadside. And that's what you see in some of these communities. You know, I have colleagues all around the state, and I'm fortunate enough to be in some groups to talk to them. And many times the problems these needle exchanges create aren't worth whatever solutions they have.
So essentially it's an outsized solution to a problem. And I guess, just judging by what you're saying, it created a bigger problem in Scott County than what they had.
What I'm saying is Scott County was an isolated incident. But many places, like my colleague up in Madison, okay, he...
Is that Anderson, Indiana? Okay.
Yeah, I believe, and I don't know where it is, but, you know, he's talked to me about all the problems it creates. There's places down where, like I said, those are real examples where they're finding needles in dugouts and along streets and everything. And so I'm all for trying to get to a solution to, number one, reduce the number of drug users we have, period, and number two, ensure that we have great health and safety outcomes. I'm just not sure a needle exchange, which sometimes isn't just the needle, it's everything you need but the drugs, to use the drugs. I mean, we're talking about the whole kit here.
Paraphernalia.
I'm not sure it's the answer. And what I've presented years ago to the local governing bodies was the idea that, look, we are in a pretty good position here. Our enforcement piece is in place. Our treatment piece is in place. We want to send the message loud and clear. Keep driving on I-69 if you're a drug dealer, because this is not welcomed here. This is not what we are about.
Very good comments. Essentially, in your opinion, you believe that if we had this type of a program, it would flood the local area with needles.
I worry about it. And I mean, this is not taken in a vacuum. I will talk to the health department, and if there's a problem out there, I would love to be part of the solution. I just didn't see that it was a good fit for Davis County at the time.
Sure. And so I know there are folks on both sides of this issue. The people who are saying that it is a good idea, I think the governor has proposed this. I think the state AG has been against this. Walk me through that. Why do you have two statewide officials, same party, one saying they're for it, one saying they're against it?
I think the governor is a terrific, terrific governor, terrific ideas. I think that the way it was framed and the way I understand it to be was what he did was allow local communities to make the decision.
Make the decision.
I think that's a terrific fit. Davis County, it's not a fit. I'm not the prosecutor in Monroe County or in any other county around Scott County. So what I'm saying is based on the information I have, based on the boots on the ground information from the officers I work with every day, here's the solution. Don't bring it here.
Very good. Good comments. Let's move on to you know, the opioid epidemic, heroin, these types of things. Is that a problem that we've got here in Davies County? Are we kept away from some of these bigger issues? Tell us about that.
We are fortunate in many respects, but for me to say it's not a problem would be to ignore it. There is a problem. It's a nationwide problem. We have lost too many people already to this epidemic. I worry about it every day and every night, and that there's more that we can do. I like the way we're positioned. I think we've mitigated a lot of the damage.
And in what sense? You're saying position. You mean geographically or?
This is credit to the people that are working all night to keep the drugs down in Davis County. But there's a team of law enforcement that nobody's ever going to meet. You know, you're not going to know who they are when you see them at Walmart or at the gas station. But as prosecutor, I'm lucky enough to have a team of guys and ladies who are 100% dedicated to making this the place nobody wants to sell drugs. And the citizens are a downstream benefactor of that. So does that mean that there's not a problem at all? No. Does that mean we're safer than a lot of other places? Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Even our neighboring communities, you think we're better off?
I am not going to point fingers to any specific county. I'm just saying that for us here in Davis County, I can assure the citizens that there are people working long, hard hours on tough, difficult drug cases, and they are relentless. And as a result, the problem is still there, but it could be worse.
Okay. Methamphetamine, that was a big deal, you know, in the last 10 years. Have we moved on from that? Is it still, is it a bigger issue than some of these other things? Or what are your thoughts on that, Dan?
So here you go. Methamphetamine, when I first started in the early 2000s, was a manufacturing problem. I would probably get, at least it seemed like, one time a week, have to get up and do a search warrant because we were smelling chemicals involved with manufacturing methamphetamine. So this shows that legislation works, right? The power of good ideas. So when the
tell us about those good ideas.
Pseudoephedrine became harder to get.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
That was before I was on needle exchange. I was on making pseudoephedrine harder to get, and the statistics were there. You know, I want to say it was like Oregon and Mississippi. They made pseudoephedrine harder to get. So then all of a sudden, your drug labs go from however many hundreds to just dozens, like in the span of a year. It was just a phenomenal decrease. So we got that passed in Indiana, hard push from my other colleagues all around the state, terrific prosecutors everywhere else. So then what happens, though, is it doesn't really take care of our meth problem. If I had to characterize Davis County, we're still a meth county. But what it does is it transfers it from a manufacturing concept to a more of an old school distribution concept. So it's going through different channels where it's getting smuggled in, usually from Mexico, and it's going from one big city to another big city, and then from one bigger drug dealer to one smaller drug dealer until it's being distributed here.
Well, why would it come in from Mexico if you've got all the ingredients to make it here in the United States?
Well, because it's just the simple economics of it. It's cheaper to buy it on the street than it is to go through all the hassle and all the signing that you have to do to get the pseudoephedrine, find a place to do it. So it just has pushed it down. But that's just been my experience. And, you know, that's just the availability is still there.
Do you think there's less use now than there was 10 years ago?
You know, I look at my statistics a lot, and I would like to think there's less use. I'm reluctant to say that without having it right in front of me. I feel like methamphetamine has a very high recidivism rate. So,
and for our listeners, you know, and for me, I'm not very smart. What does recidivism mean, Dan?
Recidivism just means that it's a super addictive drug in terms of wanting to come back to it. I've talked to a lot of people who have kicked it for years. They have not touched it for years, and then they have a life event. That's how they go back to it. And the next thing you know, they're in court again. So I find that extraordinarily difficult. But I wonder how many of the cases I look at are recidivist people who have come back again as opposed to new users.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about civil forfeiture.
Sure.
I know this is a kind of a hot topic. It could be another topic that's discussed in the state legislature coming up. Tell me about what that means. And I know recently there was some locally we are bringing someone on to assist us with our civil forfeiture in this county. Tell us about what that is and why it's necessary.
Civil forfeiture has gotten a bad rap from a lot of people, and probably deservedly so. I mean, there are some prosecutors that have overreached, and they have taken grandma's Buick LeSabre whenever grandson had a marijuana cigarette.
Right.
Marijuana cigarette in it.
Yeah.
But the concept goes like this. If you use something, money, assets, whatever, in furtherance of a crime, you're subject to losing whatever those assets, cash is, because, you know, basically you can't expect to have this and then use it in furtherance of a crime, but it's two separate processes. There's a criminal process, there's a civil process to civilly forfeit. The reason the county has engaged a different attorney to do the civil part is I don't want any part of it. I don't want it to influence my decision. I am strictly a criminal prosecutor. I am 100% in that game. If there is something that is worth forfeiting, someone else needs to take a look at it, make the judgment call, I'm out. That has nothing I'm interested in. By the same token, it's an important enforcement piece because people who profit off of illegal activity should be A, deterred from doing so, right? And B, not to get to keep their...
And I'll push back on that a little bit. Do you think that it's an effective deterrence? Do people really know that this may happen? And so, I mean, are they not deterred by other things other than civil forfeiture?
Excellent point. Like, as if the idea that going to prison for a long time isn't scary enough, but right. maybe I'll lose my car, that's going to keep me. No, I mean, that's a good point. And here's the thing. I have purposely stayed away from it for a long time. I feel much better about getting into it now because the legislature and the governor, they've done a terrific job of really dialing in what civil forfeiture is. And they've done a terrific job in determining who gets what at the end. You know, I am in for it in so far
as... Tell us about that, though. So who gets what at the end?
So the concept is basically this, that most of the money... should be given back to either law enforcement or whatever else. Doesn't go to me, right? Like, does not, I don't get to keep the money for me as my salary.
That's good to know.
I don't want the money as part of my salary. Be a terrible decision.
Right.
But it, to
Because then the economics would be bad. It's just, the incentives would be bad.
Right. Sure. Then you'd be looking for the wrong kind of cases. It should be the kind of thing you come across and then, wow, this might be something worth forfeiting. Someone else can make that determination and go on from there. But it's a way to recoup money, assets for the drug unit that's working it so that they can have money and assets to continue to prosecute drug cases. You know, they're not cheap. They can be very expensive. And it would be a way just so that the taxpayers don't have to foot the bill for some of these investigations.
Absolutely. It makes sense to make the criminal foot the bill for that type of thing instead of a taxpayer. Tell us a little bit about, and this is going to be more of a personal sure. question. Tell us why you like being the prosecutor of Daviess County. What do you see doing in this, your third term, and what are some of your goals coming up?
So what I tell kids all the time, and this comes up, when you're a prosecutor, you have a chance, hopefully, to do the right thing every time. I'm not saying I do, but I really do try. It really is my goal. And one of the most rewarding things as prosecutor is to give somebody a shot who doesn't deserve it. And this person's saying to you, look, just give me a shot. Give me a chance to get a job, to pay for my children, to... provide for them.
Yeah, to do better.
To do better. Give me a shot. And the ability to do that, the ability to reach them on a one-to-one human level and let them know I respect them as a person, I just think that they made a single bad decision, is really kind of what this is all about. And that is a terrific feeling. But the other part of it is, When you do get the people that are a danger to society that need to be dealt with, I don't want anyone else to stand in that gap. That's my job, to figure out a solution for those kinds of people. And I would like to protect the children of this community and the people who are just waking up every day hoping to live their life without any interference from the criminal world.
It's a good response. We got to get wrapped up here, and I just want you to know we appreciate your time here. I want to give you another 30 seconds or 60 seconds to talk about your upcoming 4 years and what you'd like to see happen and your goals and just what you're going to be working on.
Well, the great thing about the election cycle is every 4 years, you kind of get a chance to take stock on where you've been and where you want to go. And
good time point. Good time to look back. Right?
It is. And I'm really grateful for my experience with Sheriff Harbstreit, and I'm going to miss him like crazy. I'm not embarrassed to tell you, I loved him. I love him. He knows it. He's been a terrific influence for me. He's taught me so much about life, about law enforcement, and so that's going to be part of what I'm going to miss. But looking forward, I see a group of young prosecutors that I have on my team, Kurt Leinenbach, Elise Bowling, Jennifer Johnson. I'm excited to see where they can do.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to see where they can go.
Very good. I appreciate you coming on the show. Appreciate you talking about these issues.
Anytime.
We need to get you on here more often.
Anytime you can suffer through it.
Okay. We might actually get you to maybe replace Dave on election.
Hey, sounds like a good time.
He always wants to cut the show short when things aren't going as well. It's like a basketball game when your team's losing and you're like, I'm not going to watch this.
Hey,
anymore,
he did terrific on election night. You did too.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Have a great week.
Appreciate
Make it another good 4 years.
Thank you for the support.
Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9, and 101.3 FM, 1580 a.m. You can also listen to or download a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every weekend to WAMW as we focus on the community.